the TMQ podcast, coming to you from Date Cova Promotions Studios 1 in Wichita, Kansas, where we will visit the past, discuss the present, and possibly the future of the music we love the most, which is, of course, rock and roll. So I invite you to sit back, clear your mind, or do whatever you like, and enjoy the TMQ podcast. Yeah, I am back. It's been a while. This has been a very long hiatus. I wonder if I could still manage this control board here. Of course I can. I'm Tommy Martinez, and I'm here to talk with you a little bit and say, hey, what's going on? I haven't podcasted itself. I guess if that's even an appropriate verb, podcasted probably is. But it doesn't matter. I'm back and enjoying a Saturday morning here, a pre 4th of July weekend, because on the 5th of July, if you are up to speed on all the rock and roll heavy metal news around the world, you know that the mighty Black Sabbath will be celebrating their quote-unquote last show on the 5th of July in Birmingham, England. There's a lot of buzz going on around it, so I figured, hey, why not come back on, podcast a little bit, give my two cents. So how about we start this episode of the TMQ podcast. It's Rockin' History, brought to you from the pages of history.com, todayinmusic.com, songfacthistory.com, and classicbands.com. You know that's unmistakable. Guns N' Roses, Rocket Queen, live in St. Louis, July of 1991. Just threw himself into the crowd, which is pretty freaking awesome. This was 1991, did I say? And the band keeps on jamming like it's nothing. And it's probably one of the coolest funked out rock and roll records to do. Listen to that. You could actually sway and dance to this shit. I love it. Man, this was when rock and roll wasn't, you know, it wasn't so Pride Month. No offense to the Priders, by the way. Congratulations on your month. And it's always awesome to see you guys celebrate. Anyway, going back to Guns N' Roses, this was Guns N' Roses Untamed. You know, Guns N' Roses came on the scene in 1987. You know, this is 1991, 4 years later. Guns N' Roses is touring. Use Your Illusions, both 1 and 2, are ready to come out. I want to say September, around there more or less. It still hadn't gone out, but they were touring. Already on their momentum. Here they are in St. Louis. Somebody was taking pictures or video. Something was going on. Axl Rose got a glimpse of it while they're singing one of my favorite Guns N' Roses songs and just jumps off the stage. Gets into this altercation. Then he gets arrested. So let's read what the history piece says on it, just in case I missed something. It says it was to July of 1991 and Axl Rose caused a riot to break out during one of their gigs, leaping into the crowd to remove a camera from a fan at the Riverport Amphitheater in Maryland Heights. That's actually suburban St. Louis. Here's a good piece of information. Over 50 people were injured and 15 fans were arrested along with Axl Rose. And if you're younger listening to this podcast and you weren't able to live those years, really, that's what rock and roll used to be, at least news-wise. I mean, this wasn't nothing uncommon. There was all this chaos. Nobody was getting canceled. It was a lot of fun.
To go to these shows, to see these artists perform, it was something that you would thought would never end. Plus, this was the time that Axl Rose was getting a little bit unstable, where you would go to the show and you wouldn't know if Guns N' Roses would come on stage and perform on time. There were no tracks. There was no direction. It was just the band jamming away. Can you imagine? We fast forward to 2025, something like that happens. You would never hear that awesome jam that we heard there at the end of this melee. Plus, it was in Missouri. Even though St. Louis is a, you know, modern city, quote unquote, you have a lot of trailer trash out there. You got those kind of individuals out there that look that they were inbred. You know what I'm talking about. And don't get upset. Not everybody out there is that way. But I lived in St. Louis a bunch of years. I lived in the St. Louis metro area. You have that Western Illinois crowd that pours in there. You have those counties to the west of St. Louis County and Southern Missouri crowd also that pours into the area to see. These are a bunch of people without shirts and with beers in their hands and all that. I know because I worked the Riverport Amphitheater as part of one of the nonprofits that used to serve beer there at the amphitheater. You would sign up as a volunteer, and Anheuser-Busch, I believe, or somebody from Anheuser-Busch used to come out and give this class. It was a two-evening class, and they used to show you, you know, how to serve beer, how to recognize people that were too drunk to be able to serve them any more beer. You couldn't serve more than two beers per person, etc., etc. And, you know, with that type of crowd, you're always going to get pushback when you don't give them more than two beers. It never failed. And mentioning all this, I could absolutely see that happening that evening with Guns N' Roses, Axl Rose throwing himself off the stage, because these type of people do not follow any kinds of rules. So I bet you $1 million there was a no camera policy. Now, you have to remember, this is not the time of cell phones and cameras on your cell phones. This is probably a real VHS, maybe a 8mm film camera with the intent to bootleg this show. Axl Rose saw that and said, fuck this shit. I'm taking that camera. Now, the rest of the story is the police attempted to arrest Axl Rose. That didn't happen. It was a year later when they were able to finally arrest Axl. Guns N' Roses had gone overseas to tour on that side of the world. Charges were filed. They finally came back. Axl Rose turned himself in to the authorities in St. Louis. But the judge ruled that Axl didn't directly incite this riot. So they considered it a riot, I guess. Also, Guns N' Roses' defense team stated Guns N' Roses security had asked local security to try to take this camera away. Nobody paid attention or did anything about it. That's why Axl Rose took matters into his own hands. Plus, as I mentioned before, there was the shenanigans of the fans throwing bottles at the band. And they were also pissed because the Riverport Amphitheater allegedly did not enforce their drink limits. Axl was found guilty of property damage, paid $50,000, and was placed on a two-year probation. That's a joke. We fast forward again to 2025. Guns N' Roses right now is touring in Europe. There was a report in their show in Istanbul, Turkey. Some fans complaining about Axl Rose's voice. Some bullshit like that. But hey, at least it's a real voice coming out those speakers and not some tracks. Personally, I can't wait till they come back to the States. Hopefully there'll be a show close by. Maybe I'll catch it. Who knows?
It's the rock news on the TMQ podcast. News that matters to me, and I'm bringing it to you on this episode. Black Sabbath, the name that is synonymous with heavy metal, the godfathers of heavy metal, are evidently saying farewell to their fans, and in such a way that it'll be a global event via live stream
on the 5th of July of this year. In the past few weeks, if you do pay attention to the rock news, I mean real rock news, not the fluffy kind of K-pop, whatever the hell else that they dare to call rock nowadays, you would have seen a bunch of footage of tributes, of photographs, of all kinds of things Black Sabbath. All the heavy hitters of rock and roll have done something or have mentioned something in regards to this final quote-unquote show. I hope it's the final one because I hate when they do that and then it's not the final, i.e. my heroes of Kiss. Things like performances in their shows of songs written by Black Sabbath. Interviews where they're telling stories of interactions with the band, how they were influenced, the impact they'd had on their own careers. It's just been a Black Sabbath love fest. And when I say Black Sabbath, I'm talking about the original four members of Black Sabbath. The guys from Birmingham, England, that back in 1968 came together and gifted the world with their brand of rock and roll. And those guys are none other than Tony Iommi, Bill Ward, Geezer Butler, and of course, John Michael, Ozzy Osbourne. The four guys credited for revolutionizing the music industry and creating this genre of heavy metal, or more likely, making it prolific. Heavy metal itself existed before Black Sabbath, but that's controversial, this, and the other. But these are the guys that brought it to the forefront, gave it a particular feel, the themes within it, which were dark, that angry. The world really isn't this beautiful love and peace place that bands like the Beatles used to sing about. Black Sabbath came along and said, hello, there's this other part of this world, and we want to let you know about it. If there was ever such a thing as the least likely to succeed in the band world, it would have been Black Sabbath. 1968, that was 57 years ago, and here we are today speaking about them still. To give you a little context, the number one song, the song that stayed on the charts in 1968 the longest, was Hey Jude by the Beatles. That song was inspired by John Lennon's son Julian, which Paul McCartney wrote to help Julian, in a sort of a way, cope with the separation of his dad and his mom, with a message that said, things are kind of fucked up right now, but they will get better. You would think that a band forming in 1968 would almost copycat the Beatles, right? Especially with that kind of success. But not Black Sabbath. 2 years later, they released their debut and eponymous album, Black Sabbath. And the themes to that, oh geez, were dark and from the occult. The song Black Sabbath was inspired by an experience that Geezer Butler had in the days with the band Earth. Butler, obsessed with the occult at the time, painted his apartment matte black and placed several inverted crucifixes and pictures of Satan on the wall. Ozzy gave Butler an occult book written in Latin, decorated with numerous pictures of Satan. Butler read the book, then placed it on the shelf beside his bed before going to sleep. When he woke up, this is what he claims, he saw a large black figure standing at the end of his bed staring at him. The figure vanished, and Butler ran to the shelf where he had placed the book earlier just to see that the book had disappeared. Butler told the story to Ozzy. He wrote the lyrics to the song based on Butler's experience. Also for context, the number one song in 1970 when this album was released was Bridge Over Troubled Waters by Simon and Garfunkel. Black Sabbath in no way whatsoever, lyrically, musically, image-wise, were not ready to conform and be part of the popular culture. They unleashed on the world an album with these dark themes and toned-down instruments. On top of Black Sabbath, on that record was NIB and The Wizard, staples of Black Sabbathdom. I was maybe about 14, just ready to start high school, when I discovered Black Sabbath. It was the Paranoid record. I had a friend of mine, he had the record, and he played it for me, and I said, oh, wow, that's crazy. War Pigs was on that, Iron Man was on that, obviously Paranoid was on there. I remember the cover of the album. It had that soldieristic kind of future, dystopian kind of warrior with that sword in hand, ready to slice whoever it was. I think Fairies Wear Boots is on that record as well. The albums at the time didn't have any lyrics, so you had to listen to it really, really close to get that feel. Iron Man was the one that just sticks out because of that guitar intro and the robotic sounding, distorted, megaphone-ish, and menacing warning. I am Iron Man.
Not too bad, but it'll never replace the original.
And of course, you all know what comes after that. Don, 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 don.
Ooh, it's just absolutely incredible energy you get from this song. And also, I was a comic book reader, so Iron Man was a character that I knew very well. So I guess I made a relation between both of them when I was that kid. Hanging out at Arcides Figueroa High School in Añasco, Puerto Rico. Now Black Sabbath says goodbye, and a band that's never shied away from any kind of controversy. There's been all kinds of controversy leading up to this final show. Things like this and that guitarist didn't get invited. This drum player from this era wasn't invited. You know, and I get it. Black Sabbath has a long history. Even if you want to throw in there the mighty Ronnie James Dio, which had great success with Black Sabbath. But I'm one to think that this show is about the original four, and especially a show to say goodbye to Ozzy. And it's not to take away credit from all these great contributors during this long trajectory of Black Sabbath. But we all know that Ozzy has had a lot of health problems in the final years, and I think this is very fitting that an artist such as Ozzy Osbourne gets to do a final show. Let's hope that he shows up and he's in some good health so he could do his best for all the fans. And just in case for the assholes that always find some kind of mental issue with these kind of things, this show has a billing like that I haven't seen in a long time. It has, you know, of course, the mighty Black Sabbath. It has Ozzy probably performing by himself, Metallica, Slayer, Pantera, Gojira, Hailstorm, Alice in Chains, Lamb of God, Anthrax, and Mastodon. Those are the people that will be backing up this show. Heavy hitters, metal gods in their own right, albeit lesser gods, but still. Like I mentioned before, it will live stream on pay-per-view. I don't think it's that expensive. I think it's about like $40, something like that, if that. And I'm almost positive, if you don't get to see this on live stream, there'll be some kind of album or some documentary that'll stream later on one of the online services. I'm positive this will happen. So check it out. Drop me a line, something, to let me know your feel, maybe your experiences. How do you musically connect with Black Sabbath, their legacy? Maybe how they inspired you to learn the chords to Iron Man. And speaking about learning chords and whatnot, I want to send out a big shout out and a fraternal salute to my brother, Mr. Aaron Epp. I just want to let you know that we've been thinking about you, and you know how it works. In Casa de Martinez, we're here for you, my friend. That was my podcast for today. I thought it was very fitting that a group like Black Sabbath be recognized on any media that has to do with this awesome genre that we love so much, heavy metal, hard rock, and the rest of that formula that fills our soul, it fills our mind, fills our daily existence. The TMQ podcast, streaming on your favorite platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, RSS Podcast, and others. As always, I'll ask you not to let anyone tell you how you should think. Use your research skills to call them out on their bullshit. Even me. Subscribe and check it out when your notification bell chimes. I am your host, El Gran Tommy Martinez, and you are listening to the best podcast, the TMQ Podcast. Hasta la próxima, baby. And until then, keep it rocking.